In the
Oh,
bathroom.
nice.
Bam.
My
We'll get to
Telegram
hear it now.
updated.
Wait, so like it's not gonna start right away?
When?
Is it really gonna be 3 minutes?
That was right.
Subscribe to Simply Bitcoin.
Excuse me, but I would like to speak to the manager, please.
Yes, the manager here. How can I help you? Ma'am, are you still there?
Okay. Hello. Is it true that the client is always right? Have you heard that?
Not only have I heard that expression, our business takes pride in it being part of our corporate culture here.
Then why don't you accept my coupon?
Ma'am, as far as I understand it from how our cashier described what you handed to him and called a coupon, it was a wadded up kind of it was a card shaped, a piece of material made out of what looked like pubic hair that had been extracted from some sort of drain, because there was like soap scum in it, and you had written in glitter glue coupon, but it was spelled wrong.
Yeah, so I'm like I love the environment. It's like recycling. I'm recycling, okay. A coupon is a coupon, though, Sax. You have to accept it.
There's no letter Y in coupon.
There's a Y in whip, and I will whip you.
I mean, if you want to whip me, there's a customer appreciation whip that we keep in the back. If you don't mind, I'll bring it out in just a second. Just let me pull on these thigh highs.
Wait, you're not black, right? Who said that?
I am 1/1024th African-American, South African.
Ooh, excuse me, we have royalty here. I didn't know, like, the great cousin of Elon Musk is here. Ooh, now accept my coupon!
Absolutely, ma'am. What was the coupon intended to purchase? Because you just gave us the coupon, but no, I mean, you didn't bring any of the items that we sell here up for purchase.
The coupon is an appreciation coupon. So you accept it, it means you appreciate me. And I can leave and give a Yelp review, very good for you. Okay, this is the deal. Now, accept it or no?
Yes, absolutely. This coupon is accepted, and I accept that you appreciate me.
No. If you want that, you have to give me back the coupon.
If I give you the coupon back, does that mean you don't appreciate me anymore?
No, if I take it back, it means I do. Wait, that didn't sound right. God damn it, wait.
All right. Welcome, everybody. Welcome in. You've made it to another episode of the Meme Factory Podcast. This is stream test 42. As most of you should know by now, we'll never have a real stream. We're only going to do stream tests from here until the end of time. This evening, we are graced with the presence of one Croesus. And Croesus, if you could do us a favor and introduce yourself and who you are in the Bitcoin space to everybody in here. Brief one.
Yeah, hello. Hello, all 18 of you. Wow, that's over a dozen. That's more than I was expecting.
Yeah, buddy.
I'm Croesus. If you're listening to this, you probably already have interacted with me on Twitter, because only people who are on Twitter watch this, and we're in a bear market. So I guess my shtick is I am known for being a management consultant before getting into Bitcoin. So I like to make slides and charts and wrote about my yuppie elite friends and why they're resistant to Bitcoin. So that's kind of my place in Bitcoin. Yeah.
I'm glad you know your place.
Yeah.
Now, this is your first time on the stream. I know you've seen a few of these, so you know that part of the way we generate revenue is that the companies that sponsor the show have us, have the guests advertise. So we've sent you the ad copy at your convenience. If you could go ahead and read through that, we'd be great. We'd get paid. We'd move forward.
All right, great. I'm ready. I'm ready for this one. All right. Hey, everybody. My name is Croesus, and this episode of the Meme Factory podcast is brought to you by the new candy being produced by Sus Corp, Croesus Pieces. Sus Corp has done it again. They have crafted the ultimate snacking food for no-coiners and shit-coiners. This candy features a shiny and familiar candy-coated exterior with a chocolate-covered miniature taser inside. Per one line worker at the company, it's shockingly tasty. Sus Corp knows you have friends that love getting burned over and over again by fiat inflation and shitcoin rug pulls. That just sounds like being a Bitcoiner with extra steps. So feed your no-coiner and shitcoiner yuppie friends some Croesus Pieces today and shock them out of their fiat mindset. Get a discount on your first order of Croesus Pieces with discount code Creasy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Thank you.
Sweet. Thank you. Up enough there? Is that that up to standard for you guys?
There's no standard. As long as it gets read, we get paid. And that's all I care about, honestly. Now, I came across you on Twitter right around the same time I was starting to interact with Bitcoin Twitter. And I knew a little bit about Croesus at the time. I knew he was the king of Lydia, which was modern-day Turkey. I knew that he had something to do with a step function of improvement on how money works. I think he made bimetal coins, gold and silver. What I didn't know is that Croesus had a tragic end. And I found that out recently. I didn't know if that had anything to do with your choice in the avatar.
Yeah, I didn't know that either when I chose that name. I also didn't know that what he's most known for is being, there's a phrase which is still kind of used, rich as Croesus.
Yeah.
Which I had never heard when I chose that name. I just chose it because of the nod to money, to monetary history, the bimetallic coin innovation. So I actually forget the details on what his sticky end was, but he ended up in some sort of like servitude or whatnot to Darius, was it? To some
Cyrus,
conqueror.
Cyrus. Persia. He ended up as not a consultant. He ended up as a management consultant for Cyrus.
Yeah. He was making slides.
He was making slides, yeah. Look, man, you got to make these two coins. You got to make a silver one. You got to make a gold one. And then, you know, people make more money and you can collect more taxes. Right. All yeah. Right. So it's a well-researched name that you chose. I mean, you took your time going through everything.
It jumped out at me when I was reading the Bitcoin Standard. That was the first time I'd heard of Croesus. And obviously Safe focused on that story in monetary history of that's where we got standardized metallic coins from, that innovation there. And that's just kind of clicked to me of oh wow, that is a perfect example of how money was one thing before that point in time and then got better, and in getting better it reduced friction for commerce, and obviously that's, people are going to use the format of money that makes it easier for them to use, and makes it better. So
walk me through that. How did the creation of bimetallic coins decrease friction? What kind of friction was present?
Yeah. So I guess there's sort of two types of money that would have been used before then. And one would be like, literally gold dust or like silver dust or something like that, where you're weighing out an amount. And that obviously has its challenges of weighing the thing and then assessing purity of that dust. Probably by then they're more common was to have what were called electrum coins, which was a mixture of two metals. silver and gold mixed together in a coin, and you wouldn't know what percentage it was of which. So money wasn't standardized. And so as a trader, as a merchant, if somebody was offering to pay you for your goods with a hunk of metal that you didn't know what it was because there wasn't a standard, it would cause you to have to think about what the hell is this that I'm being offered, and then assess its quality, its desirability, and how much it was worth to you, rather than knowing immediately because of the mark of the king that this is exactly this amount of gold. So that's, you know, obviously that happens in every single transaction that you would have in the entire economy. So you go from having that hurdle, that additional step in evaluating whether or not to say yes to this trade proposition. You remove that step in the process for every single transaction going on in that economy.
So as a result, you know, Croesus creates this invention 2,500 years ago, changes the way money works, or changes the standardization process for money, right?
Yeah.
And everybody in his empire as a result, or kingdom as a result, becomes wildly wealthy. And to this day, 2,500 years later, we still have the phrase, although not everybody knows it, rich as Croesus.
Yeah.
So one of the things I really enjoy about your charts and slideshows is that they're extremely bullish. So what kind of magnitude of change are we talking about with when we switch over to a fully digital value transfer system? Are we talking about the same size of a friction removal and subsequent wealth generation, or are we talking about something else?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I suppose friction removal is one of the benefits of Bitcoin, but in terms of its value to society, that's actually a much smaller piece in comparison to what absolute scarcity represents. And I think that's where most of the value for Bitcoin comes from. And that's where, when I look at all the store value assets, if you look at all the assets on the earth, there's something like 900 trillion in assets.
And what are something the big, like, what are the big buckets there?
Yeah, real estate's 200 trillion, global debt, so bonds, whether that's sovereign debt or corporate debt, is something like 250 trillion. And then equities is 100 trillion. And then there's your smaller buckets like gold or collectibles, art, and vehicles, so on. Anyway, so there's 900 trillion in assets. There's probably there's about 400 trillion of store of value, meaning that people are looking for a place to store money through time. And that's 400 trillion of the 900 trillion that are in assets. And really what that 400 trillion is looking for is the best place to propagate value through time without risk, or as little risk as possible, and as little dilution as possible through issuance of new supply or taxation or whatever. And what Bitcoin represents is the invention of absolute scarcity. So for the first time ever, there's an asset that has a hard cap supply. And that doesn't exist with anything else, even land, because technically they manage to make more land every year by filling in swamps or creating islands in the Gulf with dredged sand or whatever. And then also like cutting down rainforests, which increases supply of usable land.
Wouldn't building up count as well? Like skyscrapers,
yeah, and
apartments?
And then there's that additional layer of real estate is the muddling of two different things, of raw land, but also built square footage. So yeah, that, and you can always build more square footage of buildings. Anyway, so so Bitcoin's the first and necessarily the only absolutely scarce asset, because you can only create absolute scarcity in the digital environment, because in the physical world you can always create more of something or find more of something in the case of gold or diamonds or whatever. But so you can only do this in the digital space. And the thing about it is, once you do it once, you in the digital space, you can copy that system. So that's how we end up with one version of digital scarcity, which is the invention of absolute scarcity also. And then 20,000 altcoins, shitcoins, that are copies of a system of digital scarcity. And what we've been seeing over the last 12 years is all of those attempts to create lasting value, projects that are worth storing value in, and yet the network effects of Bitcoin and the increasing scarcity built into it are slowly eating away at any room for anything else to store any value for longer than one cycle. So, you know, on a 4-year timeline, everything loses out to Bitcoin. And it just is a black hole of value for in the digital space, and then now for the world too. So when you look at the 400 trillion of assets that are, exist in the world, where people are simply looking for the best store of value, and then here comes this thing that is the invention of absolute scarcity that's never been possible before. It has better properties for propagating value through time without dilution than anything that exists in the physical world. And you know, when you run the numbers based on that, what percentage of that 400 trillion will Bitcoin eat? It's anybody's guess where that naturally ends up, but I think it's pretty reasonable that it'll be half of it or maybe all of it. So all of it would mean 20 million per Bitcoin. Yes. Half of it would mean 10 million per Bitcoin. Maybe it only takes 10%. And then you're still talking about $1 million per Bitcoin.
Do you want me to kick him out now?
Yeah, that was a little bearish. Sorry, guys.
Do better, Croesus.
More.
Yeah, more.
Give us more.
Give us more. Give us what you think.
It is funny how in the bull market we all get on each other about like, oh, that's bearish. Why are you being so bearish? And then we all end up setting our targets at like 200,000-300,000 per Bitcoin. And it stops at 69,000, and we're all shocked at why.
Nice.
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 Talk about a tragic end to a bull market. All right, yeah. So you made...
Is it though?
No.
Yeah, let's be honest, a deeply disappointing bull market. 3.5 times the previous peak. Very disappointing.
Very disappointing.
I've been beating myself up about it. I've been thinking about it a lot too, of like, what happened? It's the combo of the China mining ban.
Oh yeah.
Just killing any momentum back when retail was piling in spring 2021.
Yep.
And then it felt like we climbed out of that hole. The hash rate recovered. Things were back on track. And right when we were about to hit that flywheel of enthusiasm from new all-time high numbers, bringing in new people, which drives up the price higher, and then you end up in a manic blow-off top, right then, that's when the Fed pivoted.
Yeah.
And that's when all the tightening started to happen and traditional markets started to sell off. And now we've had the largest wealth destruction in modern history, with $15 trillion being wiped out.
Pour it down.
Talk to... A lot of people don't really understand what that means.
I do. Don't tell me what I do and don't understand.
You live in Greece, of course.
No, I do understand, okay?
You guys destroy value all
the time. I don't know what you're talking about, but I do get it.
It's like a Greek pastime, as far as I understand.
Don't tell me what I know I don't know, Craig. You assume stuff.
What is your gender? Yellow. When is that puppet? I will assume it all day.
I'm a puppet.
Yellow, what pronouns do you go by?
Yellow.
Is it yellow giallo?
Yeah. What?
Giallo.
Giallo. Well, I don't know what that means. I don't know if it's like a lingo for your thing. I don't know. But it's yellow.
All right. So talk to me about this destruction. How do you destroy that many trillions of dollars in value?
How do you destroy that many trillions of dollars? You destroy all those trillions because you were late, 2 years late to hike rates after printing record stimulus in the pandemic, and you genuinely thought that wouldn't cause inflation.
You really think they thought it wouldn't cause inflation?
I touched on this in the Yuppie Elite article of, I went to a very good business school and they all believe the Keynesian stuff. Like, that's what I was taught. It was there's no consideration that they might be wrong. It's been so long since the battle between Keynesianism and Austrian economics was waged, mm-hmm. and the Keynesians won because that's the one that allowed the government to print money, and so the government helped make that the preferred doctrine. So the Keynesians won, and that school of thought has been passed down for several generations since then, to a point that we've forgotten that there was any valid argument on the other side. The Keynesians genuinely think that the Austrians are kooks, absolute wackos. And that's what you're taught in business school. And that's what the Fed board members are also steeped in. And I think they genuinely believed that printing money would not directly cause inflation. I think they believed the printing money might stimulate demand, which could cause inflation. But
where does a Keynesian think inflation comes from?
Yeah, they think that inflation comes from demand. They think that when people are consuming more, that causes producers to have an opportunity to raise their prices because there's so much demand that they can get away with selling things for more.
That is so ass backwards.
Yeah, exactly.
It came because you expanded the money supply.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, man, you touched on Yuppie Elite. I love that article. You basically, if I can give a brief synopsis for anybody who hasn't read it, A, read it, it's fantastic. B, essentially, The Gen Xers and millennials that have gone through, and I guess older than that too, but basically the Gen Xers and millennials are the ones that I think Croesus has contact with, are incentivized not to understand Bitcoin because of the economic model that they've spent 20 years learning and then another 20 years functioning in the business world. Am I missing anything about that article or no?
That's pretty much right.
Okay.
You're missing the really strong opening hook that I used, but besides that,
hit him with it.
Actually, I forget. It was just a tidbit with Dan.
I was gonna
friend,
ask you about Dan.
My renamed friend from business school who I had this conversation with him where I asked him what percent likelihood he thought Bitcoin would get to $1 million per coin. And he said 0.001%. And that conversation as a whole irritated me enough that I went home and started writing.
What was your response? What did you say?
Oh yeah, I said 80% likelihood. And was that 2019 or no, it was 2020. In the summer. So the halving had just happened or was about to happen. It had just happened and the price hadn't reacted at all. So back then there, you know, our understanding of Bitcoin had reached a point, like collectively with Vijay's bullish case for Bitcoin and then the Bitcoin Standard coming out both in 2018 and then a bunch of good writing from Parker Lewis and Breedlove. The understanding of Bitcoin was, oh, this has something to do with increasing scarcity and the halvings matter a lot. And maybe after this next halving, we're going to have a bull market like we did after the 2016 halving. But then the halving happened in 2020 and the price didn't move. And so there was this suspended animation of will it happen again? Will it not? And that's when I said 80% likelihood. If you asked me now, I would probably say 95% likelihood, because the mechanics that we were expecting to play out in after the 2020 halving did play out. Granted, I thought we were going to like 150,000 and we only went to 70, but we still had a major bull run from 10,000 up to 70,000, and are now finding equilibrium again in the wake of that. And here comes the next halving in 2 years. So that process to me just is going to keep playing out of every 4 years, the supply demand equilibrium gets thrown off because suddenly there's half as much supply going out into the market and there's just as many DCAers and or companies looking to add Bitcoin to their balance sheet or, you know, turn profits into Bitcoin holdings, whatever. So, you know, when the halving happens, half as much supply, just as much demand, price drift has to drift upwards in response. And that keeps happening for the next 100 years. So 95% chance that those mechanics carry us to a million plus. I just don't. I have trouble seeing how that wouldn't happen based on those mechanics. They're pre-programmed. So we'll see. I sure hope I'm right.
Hi, Rusty.
Hi, Rusty.
Looks like Rusty has a question here.
The same as well.
Rusty, whenever you want to get started with your question, you're free to go.
Go ahead, Rusty, you can start now.
Yep. Okay. Is that everyone? Yeah, good morning. Sorry,
good morning, Rusty.
Good morning, Rusty.
Good morning, Rusty.
Good morning.
Wendy,
good morning, Rusty.
I assume there'd be technical difficulties, so I came in late.
No problem, Rusty.
Thank you. Thanks, Deborah. Thanks, boss. There was talk about the halving, and if the price stays the same and the halving happens and the supply of Bitcoin every 10 minutes gets halved, it gets to the point where the halving becomes less and less less and less of amount of supply coming into the market. Like if you calculated how much less supply over a year the halving it produces, you know, that number gets significantly smaller each halving. So do you think the halving potentially has a chance? That could be a way that the halving doesn't have as much impact as it has had in the past. That's my question.
I wrestle with this and I can't find like a conclusive answer to it. I think that it's kind of Schrodinger's cat. It matters and it doesn't matter depending on how you look at it. Because at any given time, you know, it's easy to make the case for the next few halvings, obviously, of like there's 6.25 Bitcoin being made every 10 minutes right now. And so that amounts to a significant, you know, every month issuance that needs to be absorbed by net incoming demand. And so obviously the halving matters in the here and now, but then at what point does it stop mattering? Is that 12 years from now effectively, or is it 60 years or does it go the whole 100 years before it stops mattering? And I think there's some sort of phasing out of how much it matters based on the proportion of the block size in comparison to the total Bitcoin in circulation already. And I don't know. I haven't seen anybody like make a satisfying case for one way or the other, or most likely the middle ground of like what would make sense in terms of the math about, you know, where does that effectively stop mattering? I don't know. It's somewhere in the middle is I think the real answer.
In the middle of NAB to 2140.
Yeah. Yeah. But that middle could be 12 years from now, because effectively that's what 99% or close to total issuance. So maybe the middle means 12 years from now. Maybe it is 60 years from now. Hard to say.
So let's talk about Bitcoin's adoption. What does the adoption curve look like? Is it like a regular technology S curve, or is it something else? Is it like a J curve?
Yeah, I think it's like an S curve. This was one of the things I did earlier in my time in Bitcoin was in 2019, the stock to flow model came out, and it was very compelling to me. And by the way, I think it still has more value than people give it credit for right now. It's in fashion to dump on it. But I think that the stock to flow model made a mistake, or Plan B made a mistake in updating it from the first one. The first one had said that the stock to flow value, the price that the stock to flow model predicted Bitcoin would get to as its quote unquote equilibrium for this reward era, was 55,000 in the first edition. And then he updated it to, and then that output was 100,000. And obviously we didn't get to 100,000, but we did get to 70,000. And so that is overshooting the expected equilibrium of 55,000. I guess at a higher level, it probably shouldn't have had any price targets on it, because as a concept, it's sound that increasing scarcity allows this asset to be a better store of value. And the world is forced through the economic reality of you know, reducing supply issuance to value existing supply more. And that's just the physics of supply and demand with an asset like this in particular. And you know, the stock to flow model is sound on that front, but makes a mistake if it is too specific about price targets, which I think
is... Yeah, exactly. So in general, like using models to find out things that your industry, that's a positive thing, but like focusing on the price, like that's like price. We used to type on Twitter like when moon share, when target share, like that's it, right? Like those models satisfy that need of us, like to find out what the expert thinks.
Yeah, and it's so cool. And it yielded such a juicy target too. The 100,000 sounded so good and got a lot of people excited, and probably got too many people overly excited, which is probably part of why the capitulation is painful recently. Because stock to flow model seems to have been hot air all of a sudden, when really it was, you know, a valid idea that should have had some big error bars on the expected price equilibriums going forward. And
I blame Marcus.
Yeah,
me too. When I think about it, it's Marcus's fault.
Always has been.
I got derailed from whatever the original question was, but you know,
that's all right. We need to check in with Labrahuddle to get the score so far.
Oh yeah, the scores. Yeah, so I'll start. I keep a scoreboard here, Chris. So, Becca, you got a Mean Factory Cup this time. So congratulations. Chris, you got a profile picture with some updated for you. Great, you got a conversion table from hamburgers to metric system. I hope that
nice.
Yep.
Royale with cheese.
Finally gonna communicate.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Very, very useful. Yeah. I hope you like it. And
can I have a coffee for my store, please? I want a coffee.
There are no
you want
coffees.
A coffee? Mm.
Coffee.
You can't ask for your rusty. Score. He's just gonna give it to you.
I'm on it.
Micro, you got a hot water for your teammate. Pedro, you got a new phone for your alt account, for a new alt account.
Sweet.
He already knew that because he's got your phone tapped, Labra.
Pedro, do you have alt accounts?
No, many. No, I'm not sure what they're talking about.
how accounts you have?
All right, is that everybody? Did we get Rusty yet? Did you give Mr.
No, I'm missing Rusty. Rusty, you got a Fiat Standard, but translated to Australian.
Nice. And, I didn't get anything.
Hold on, Yellow. I got the best score for you.
Okay.
Yellow, you got a 3.14159265358973293.
Just mute him.
We need
to talk to
Chris.
Let me just go back.
I know.
You interrupt me. Let me just go back. I'll start all over again.
Mute him. We need to keep this going.
No, I have to find out what that is.
It's pie. You were hungry, so I gave you pie.
Barbara will DM you.
No. It has to have an end, guys. Let him end.
You know I can keep going for hours with this.
I know you can. All right, so Croesus, you recently came out with some
okay,
numbers.
Okay, DM me the whole thing, Labra. Okay, sorry.
Okay.
But type it out for him. Don't copy.
Yeah, I'm typing it right now.
Good. All right, so Croesus, you recently came out with an estimate on Bitcoin's current market grab. Am I saying that right? The adoption rate?
Adoption or penetration, depending on which word choice you want to go for.
We'll go with
penetration. You said penetration.
The word penetration.
What's Bitcoin's full penetration at this point?
Yeah, Bitcoin's full penetration at this point is, well, it's a lot like Labra's. It's about 0.5%.
And how do you get there? How do you get to 0.5%?
That's so, the tip. Yeah, just the tiniest tip. Little tip, a lot like Labra. Yes. Labra would be familiar with that level of penetration.
Wow.
If you run the numbers on adoption, if there's 2 billion people in the world with $10,000 or more of net worth.
How do you know that?
That's one of I think I got that from Statista, which is one of those statistics websites.
TradFi, Glassnode.
Yeah, it's a data point. Doesn't really need to be that robust. Anyway, that sounds about right. Something around there. Anyway, so if you have 2 billion people with $10,000 of net worth or more, and then and at the same time, you know that Bitcoin is the best savings vehicle, the best store value asset of any store value asset. So, you know, if that is true, then everyone who stores value, who has value to store, is going to want to store their value in Bitcoin, at least in part. And so if there are 2 billion people who will want to do that when they understand Bitcoin, or at least have Bitcoin bear out for long enough that they can't ignore it anymore. And then you also look at how many people have stored value in Bitcoin so far. And you can see on chain, there's...
How many do you think that is?
So on chain, there's 3 million addresses that have 0.1 Bitcoin or more in it.
Okay.
So that, gosh, right now, that's $2,000. Okay. So we'll say that's still a good threshold. 3 million addresses there. And of course, the big unknown is how many people have Bitcoin stored on an exchange. And that could be, you know, that could be 10 million or it could be 50 million. It's kind of hard to know. But if it's 10, if there are 10 million people total between the 3 million on chain and then you know, double that on exchanges, then you divide 10 million divided by 2 billion people who will eventually use this technology to store value in. And there's your 0.5%. So in terms of your adoption curve, your bell curve of adopters, we have gotten through the first fifth of the first group being the innovators. So, you know, when you think of your, when you think of your classic, like, technology adoption curve, there's that first chunk of crazies, who are really excited about technology and want to try something new, or, you know, they're the people who wore Google glasses back in the day when, that briefly had its moment. And it never made it, and Google Glass never made it further into the adoption curve than that.
Let's use iPhone users.
Okay, so then iPhone users, this would be like the people who got an iPhone 1.
Yeah.
Probably about that size. So that the innovator group is 2.5% of the total population. That's arbitrary, really, but that's how it's defined. And so if we're only 0.5%, we're a fifth of the way into the very first group, the innovator group, in global adoption of Bitcoin as a savings vehicle, as a store of value.
I don't think iPhone adoption and Bitcoin adoption has anything to do with each other. Like, I feel iPhone is like a groundbreaking thing that happened, but it happened like in a already existing, like, established, device that was the main mobile, right? But like Bitcoin was something so new that only like the crazy ones at first, like the guys, as Chris said, like wearing the Google glasses, like will try and adopt.
Yeah, I think Chris was just using as an example to demonstrate on that adoption curve, where on a technological adoption curve / bell curve where we are. And it's split up into what, four quadrants, right?
Yeah, there's innovators, early adopters, early majority, late majority, and laggards.
And the point where we are in the what'd you call it?
The innovators. Adopters.
Innovators. So in innovators, the explosive growth we've seen in Bitcoin represents a very small portion of the market, right?
So yeah.
If we follows a bell curve of adoption cohorts, we should see, what, 10 times the growth over the next cohort?
Yeah.
Is the innovator stage like the one that like all the basic stuff are built to become like normalized, like everyday thing?
It has less to do with the build out of the product and more to do with the percentage of the population that has adopted the tech, I think.
Yeah, yes, but what I'm asking, like in that S curve, where is the most, like, where do we build the most stuff that will stay on? That's what I'm asking.
There's a couple of differences, I think, with this as well, with comparing it to physical devices like the iPhone.
Yeah, shut up. He's calling me an innovator.
You've got, you know, there's two differences when you compare it to an iPhone. One is we have shit coins, and the other is that we have people who think they've got Bitcoin, but they don't, right? If you buy an iPhone, you know you've got an iPhone. You know, if you want to go out and buy something that's alternative to that, fine, but you know that you don't have an iPhone. And if you buy an iPhone, you know that it's not been rehypothecated, right? Or fractionally lent out. Whereas with Bitcoin, you have the potential for both of those things to happen with new adopters, people that come into the space and think, oh, yeah, you know, I can't afford to buy Bitcoin, but I bought this other thing that looks like Bitcoin to me. And the shitcoin industrial complex is consuming a lot of energy, right, in order to acquire more Bitcoin for itself. And so the adoption curve is actually a big shitcoin industrial complex that's leeching off this new monetary energy that's coming into the space. Would you agree with that?
It's different. I would. Yeah, it is different from I'm trying to rack my brain here of what sort of analogy does make more sense, because you're right that an iPhone,
well maybe money, right?
Yeah, and that's what I come back to is
maybe the wheel or the fire.
The fire.
Yeah, the wheel. Well, the problem with those innovations is there's objectively an immediate benefit for like fire or
Labra, stop it. Sorry, Crosses. Stop it. The guy's DMing me the Pi number on Telegram. Fucking breaking my phone, man. Stop it. God damn it, goes on and on. And on and on, like the spaces, like a song.
Yellow, do you dream about that song yet?
Oh yeah, man! Like in all my nightmares, that song's playing. Okay, because you're laughing at me, I'm gonna forward it in the Telegram.
No!
Yellow, that Red Bull can looks way too big in comparison to what?
What?
Richard Hart's pee-pee.
Ah, okay. No, this is my Red Bull, so it's okay.
Yeah, we don't need to bring Richard Hart into this.
Yeah, that guy makes me so mad.
Why does he make you so mad?
Because he's so effective at being an absolute prick.
Yeah, but
like, you can't give him any publicity by like attacking him, because that's what he wants. And then he wants to debate Bitcoiners to just get better publicity. Yeah.
I don't want to debate him, but I'm definitely down to interact with him
on Twitter. I want to, there's a certain schadenfreude of like, I want to see these shitcoiners have to be humbled by Bitcoin, probably because I felt like I went through that and I'm bitter, but everyone should have to go through that if you've made money in
you were a dot ETH like me, right?
Yeah, I was a dot ETH before they were dot ETHs.
Before it was cool.
Yeah, I was into Ethereum, and then I was actually thinking about this before coming on here. Of it's a discouraging time right now in Bitcoin, because the bull market kind of underwhelmed. And now we're looking at that next halving in 2024, and that's still a ways away. So it's all a little bit disheartening. And shitcoins stole a lot of Bitcoin's thunder this cycle, more so than last cycle, it felt like. That's disheartening, but
all my crypto friends will not agree with that. Like, they're still waiting for the so-called alt season.
God, yeah, I understand that. I've been in their shoes too, because I watched my alts go up and then I watched them get crushed by Bitcoin. But the thing that makes me a little bit excited right now for the near term for Bitcoin is, personally, I stopped being a shitcoiner around this time last cycle. It was, I held my altcoins all the way down. They got crushed versus Bitcoin. I outperformed on the way up, thought I was a genius, and had enough confidence and arrogance to hold all the way down versus Bitcoin. And then the bottom happens in early 2019. Mm-hmm. It's all depressing, but we're all in it together. Bitcoin's down, everything's down. And then in mid 2019, Bitcoin rallied and altcoins didn't. And that was finally the thing that broke my back and made me go, okay, why is Bitcoin outperforming my precious altcoins that I think are better because they're newer and have flashy technology? And that made me dig in and realize, oh, okay, I didn't understand what Bitcoin is actually solving for. And this rabbit hole goes way deeper than I realized. And holy shit, now I'm a Bitcoin maximalist.
It could be worse, man. Like you could be mining back in 2013 Feathercoin instead of Bitcoin. So it's okay.
Yeah, brutal. But anyway, so that gives me heart right now. Not Richard Hart, but it gives me heart that there are a bunch of altcoiners and NFT guys, probably, hopefully, we'll see, who, if you know, if we bottom and it sucks and everything's dead, and you know, let's say we just go sideways here for 6 months. At the end of that 6 months, Bitcoin will no longer be dunked on, and crypto will no longer be dunked on by the media. It won't even be a topic anymore. And that's how it felt last time. And then Bitcoin rallied without altcoins. And then that's when I was forced to look into Bitcoin maximalist ideas and fell down the rabbit hole. So there are probably a lot of other people like me who realized that they were missing something and then found the light of Bitcoin during that first rally after the bear. And who knows who's out there right now, who's dying, holding their alt bags and is getting close to reassessing what they think they know, but isn't there yet. And in the next 6 months, Bitcoin's going to break their back and they're going to be forced to go deeper down the rabbit hole. And then we're going to have a whole new group, a new cohort of Bitcoin maximalists who have done the homework. And they're going to contribute something to this space and, you know, add to our legion.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So your article about yuppies, I was going to say puppies then. Your article about yuppies is pretty well known, and I loved it as well. And I've got, like, my brother-in-law sits right in the middle of that bell curve as well, frustratingly for me. But actually, you've made some really cool infographics as well, and I want to kind of call you out a little bit, because you don't seem to have a like central repository for all your stuff. It's hard to find all of this stuff.
It's a pinned tweet.
Why is that? And I want to also ask, out of all those infographics that you put together, like this, the simple kind of really well laid out visual metaphors, what's been the one thing that you've found has had the most traction with the people that you've struggled the most to orange pill?
Yeah, that's a good question. I do have a pinned tweet. I don't know if you've seen that.
Where I saw that, and it's good. Oh. There's a good thread there, and it's great. I encourage everyone to check it out. But
yellow sneezes Bitcoin, huh?
But you don't have a website or anything, you know?
Yeah, I don't have a website. I'm sort of tinkering with a more ambitious writing project. I'm thinking about like trying to do like a whole series of like walking people down the rabbit hole in as simplified of a way as I can, and make it like, you know, more interesting and accessible to your average person. So I'm thinking about doing like a whole series there, but I haven't committed to it yet. I don't have like a website. I try to use the pinned tweet as my repository of all my best things. So if you scroll, you know, if you click on that and then scroll down, there's quite a bit of stuff there. But in terms of which graphics have resonated the most with people, there's one I have of comparing the internet of information to the internet of value, and highlighting how there's an application layer and a protocol layer for the internet of information. And it's not possible to own the protocol layer for the internet of information. all you can do is own the application layer. So you can own stock in Netflix or Google or Facebook, but you can't own TCP/IP. You can't own any of the other protocols. They're just information protocols. They're just sets of rules for how to exchange information. And that's compared to the Internet of Value, where there's the application layer like Strike or Coinbase even. And then there's also the protocol layer, Bitcoin, and there's the network, but there's, because it's the Internet of Value, there's fundamentally units of value in the Internet of Value, and people have to, there has to be somebody owning those units of value that underpin this whole system, the accounting unit for the system.
Croesus, I'm going to interrupt you. It looks like Yellow has a question and Labra has a question.
Yeah, I just want to give my time to Labra. I just want to Labra to speak.
Labra, go ahead. You've had your hand up for a while.
Yep. Thank you, Yellow. Hi, Rusty.
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Labra. Thanks for looking like I wasn't going to come around. Something resonated with me, what you said back then, where you said you didn't start going down the rabbit hole until you started to get wrecked. And I'm starting to think that it's the whole bear cycle is almost part of the design of Bitcoin, because I agree, I didn't go down the rabbit hole fully until I started to lose money. When it's going up forever, yes, you think you're already a genius and you don't need to know anything else. When it's going down, that's when you start to learn. That's when you start to find out why the fuck is this thing going down? You know, what is it? What am I holding? And then is it by design, and is it a good thing that these bear markets happen?
Yeah, I think about how, like, why did Satoshi choose the step function of increasing scarcity rather than like a smoothed out, you know, it could have been a straight line. Why was it 50 Bitcoin per block for 4 years, then 25, and you know, why that rate of diminishment? I don't know, but it feels like it was a deliberate choice, because Bitcoin ends up growing like a tree. It has its tree rings, where it, you know, a shock of a supply shock happens after the halving, and the price has to drift upwards, and then it turns into a sprint upwards to try to find its new equilibrium point. And that growth that happens from the free publicity, the marketing of, oh my God, look how much money everybody who's holding Bitcoin is making right now. And that forces everyone on Earth to question what they're missing about Bitcoin. So that's free marketing right there. And then sort of by definition, when you have those periods of excess, that you know, overly enthusiastic growth, that has to be balanced out by washing out that excess. And so you're going to get the pendulum swinging from enthusiasm back to fear and regret and capitulation, which is where we are now, I think. And then that's your, you know, that's your winter in your tree ring. That's where things harden. And that period of growth is then digested, processed, and solidified as that new cohort of hodlers and builders, you know, starts contributing, hence, you know, from that point forward to Bitcoin. And then the cycle repeats itself again. So I think there's a deliberate beauty and a deliberate harnessing of human psychology in the step function of increasing scarcity that Satoshi implemented. So I think that, you know, I think in that sense, the bear markets have a purpose. They are, I don't think that the, you know, maybe it's the whole cycle is deliberate, and I think the bear market has its purpose. And in terms of cleansing out shitcoins, it's sort of accidental, but you know, in the way that altcoins are beta on top of Bitcoin signal.
They are beta.
When things go up too fast and altcoins go up even faster, they crash and crash even harder on the backside. And that's how Bitcoin consolidates its strength and moves towards the next halving. It's just a beautiful system.
That was nice. That was really nice answer.
Thank you.
That's a short right there. That's nice.
Croesus, that was really nice.
Yeah, appreciate really it. Nice.
It's a short nice. Right there, man.
Very nice. Nice.
All right, so Croesus, we're coming up on our hour, and there's a few things we have to do before we get going here. And I want to let everybody know that you're sick with COVID, so we're all taking a risk here being in the room with you. But yeah. I want to say thank you for actually making it out tonight. I hope you're able to recover well after this. Who is doing the RD question this evening? I don't know.
Pedro.
It's Becca. Becca's on it tonight.
All right. Okay. Becca, hit him.
Okay, let me just get my notes here. Labra sent them over, so you can see it's pretty intense. So I hope you have a few more minutes.
Human resources is pretty good here at the Meme Factory.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Top quality. You're welcome, HR. Guys. Yeah. Okay, are you ready? Here we go. If the Meme Factory did exist, and we all know it doesn't, who would you like? Would you retweet, and who would you mute?
Somehow I hadn't seen this one. let's see. Who would I like? Who would I retweet? And who would I mute? You know, Labra just gets me with his dog memes. I have a dog, and the dog memes speak to me. So he's getting my retweet.
Thank you.
Nice.
Yellow's got my like for Don't Stop Believing.
Hell yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yellow, side note, what's your expectation of how, like, what, when is that gonna be, when are you gonna be released from that obligation?
When Yellow capitulates, we moon.
Yeah.
I expect I'll be doing it for like 1.5 years more.
1.5 years. Yeah. That's
at 99,999 for Bitcoin. We are going to sell so we can go back.
Get Sailor to put pressure downwards.
Thanks, Labra.
And my mute obviously is for Greg.
Obviously.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
It's a must.
All right. Who's doing the Sean question tonight?
Oh yeah. So anyway, we're like having a having party in around about like 2024. No big deal, but if you're not doing anything, then you're like invited or whatever or whatever.
Savage. That was savage.
Are you up for it or what? Can I stick your name down or what?
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
So Croesus, we're gonna do a halving party in 2024 at block height 840,000, of course. You're invited to that. Everybody's coming, of course.
Are you guys gonna be playing basketball, or what are you gonna do at the halving party?
Yeah, everything is basketball.
Not everything is basketball, Croesus.
Yeah, not everything is basketball. Calm down.
Hold on, I'm getting conflicting messages from the Meme Factory on how much of life is basketball.
Good. I mean, you're sitting in a meeting with the people that work in a and live.
You don't know that I'm sitting. You're assuming that.
Oh yeah, I'm assuming the shit out of it.
Sure, I am sitting though. You can probably hear it.
Is that what that noise was?
Yeah.
All right, Croesus. So before we head out, if you could take a minute, tell anybody who's watching what you're working on, that's important to you, how to find you.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter.
You are?
Yeah, Croesus.
Really?
Spelled like on the screen, underscore BTC. I'm there. I'm really bad at responding to DMs.
You are.
But I'm good at responding to comments. So hit me up in the comments.
So if I DM you, how is your trade going? Will you respond?
Yeah, I would probably. I mean, okay. I talked to all the other people who do that to me.
Yeah, good.
Great conversations.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. It's been another test stream from the Meme Factory. Croesus, we appreciate you going, man.
Yeah, thanks, Croesus. You guys get to figure it out and go live sometime.
Thank you, Croesus.
Thank you.